Plug into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Yeah. Hi.
Hey, guys. Thank you for tuning into the AfterBuzz TV Doctor Who After Show. We are ridiculous. And we are here to talk to you about episode 904. I don't know where I got two from. Before the Flood.
Yes.
Before the Flood.
Ooh. And let's introduce ourselves first. Yeah. Guys, I'm your host, Zach Wilson, back again this week. Joining me for the panel for this wonderful episode, Tari Miller.
Hey guys, I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Tari J. It's TauriJay.
And here joining us this week.
Hi, I'm Adrienne Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrienne Snow, MSADRIANSNOW as well. Yeah.
All right, Yael Teagle couldn't join us tonight. She's only just enjoying herself at New York Comic Con, Don't feel too bad for her. But follow her along at Yael Teagle on Twitter for all those updates that she's just giving out.
Yeah, it's YaelTygiel at Yael Teagle.
You know exactly how she says it.
I think we have to address what we like. Let's address the opening, just because I think it has to be done.
Yes.
We opened on this. I guess we'll discuss the. Let's just talk about the
yes.
music.
Yeah.
The guitar comes back.
Yes.
It's like a staple now.
Murray Gold recorded. The Doctor Who composer. He does most of the music for Doctor Who, and he did this ridiculous rock anthem version of it, which obviously we enjoyed.
Yes.
Hope
it stays.
Do you guys think it was fun?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was a nice little riff off of like the normal Doctor Who theme, and it kind of gives Peter Capaldi like his own flair that's separate from everyone else, which is kind of nice to see.
Yeah. It hit all the right chords, one could say.
Puns.
Ha ha! It's what I do.
Here we go.
But no, I really enjoyed it. It, like, I even wrote on my notes, F yeah, guitar riff! because I need it in my life. I hope it stays. I hope it's there forever.
Yeah. It's good. And there was a little hidden bit of trivia that I missed, but somebody who filled me in about, was on the amp. It had a little like sticker from Magpie Electronics or Magpie Electricals, rather.
Okay.
Which is from the Tenet episode, The Idiot's Lantern.
Oh.
Where the TVs are like stealing faces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was Magpie Electricals.
Oh, nice.
Was the shop.
That's a cute little Easter egg.
A little nod. Yeah. It was also in, apparently there was another reference to it in on Starship UK in The Beast Below.
Okay.
So it's just like an electronic supplier for all, through all space and time.
Yeah.
That little electronic shop has lasted over 150 years.
Right?
To make it to 2119.
Yeah.
Or I guess 100 years. Whatever. Nobody's counting.
Yeah.
Circuit City lasted a while, right?
I think Radio Shack has lasted longer, actually.
That's true, yes. Stands the test of time.
It's got one more year in it.
But this episode, let's talk about the actual episode.
Yes.
It's the second part of this, the second two-part of the season. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think of everything? Like, just what's your overall reaction?
Me? I think
you're our guest.
It's interesting that they started with two two-parters. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen them do that before. In terms of the story, it's kind of like a nice little throwback to, oh my gosh, oh no.
Davies?
To Davies and to also the Matt Smith, the plastic, why is my brain farting on this? You know, where you find out about how Amy is not actually Amy. That she's,
oh, yes.
It's kind of like a throwback to that kind of two-parter as well of like the having the kind of bottle episode of like the meeting the group of people and getting their dynamic. So that's been nice. I am also kind of looking for the overarching arc to kind of play in, and that kind of was hinted at a little bit, I think, with the Minister of War.
Right.
So I'm kind of always looking for those little seeds to be planted. But overall, okay. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was a decent part two. I was a little upset at the end of part one, mostly because they have gotten in a pattern in this season so far where, as a cliffhanger, they will kill a main character and be like, ho, 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 main character's dead. Mm. Let's see how they get out of this one. I was a little embittered by that. And then I came back to this one, and it was fun. I really liked the characters. I really liked the underlying, like, messages that were going through. Mm. And I also loved that Zach was right.
Oh, yeah. I was going to save it, but yeah.
Called it.
About the doctor being in the cryostasis tube.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. Like, the whole circular logic. For me, this episode had a lot of strong points. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a good conclusion to the two-parter. Mm-hmm. They hit some themes that I didn't... I just didn't quite connect with how they presented them, and we'll get into that later, but mm-hmm. stuff like the bootstrap paradox.
Oh, see, mm-hmm. I love the fact that they introduced a bootstrap
well,
paradox.
Well, I have mixed feelings about it, and mm-hmm. This is a longer discussion that we'll get into.
Okay.
Before that, I want to go through like the story of the episode and like what we thought of all of that. So let's start with the big fish in the room, mm-hmm. if you will. the Fisher King.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was interesting that there was like a lot of history that they didn't talk about, I guess.
Okay.
In this episode, like the Fisher King is, I guess, an old British, like, legend.
Oh really?
I thought it was just a really cool movie with Robin Williams.
Very.
Sorry, I just had to comment on that.
Hey, no.
It's an Arthurian legend, okay. Like medieval times. The Fisher King or the Wounded King, and it involves the Holy Grail. The Fisher King was the last guardian of the Holy Grail. And if you were selected to be part of his like team or it's something like that,
mm-hmm.
So I see that they're when hearing it, I see the components mm-hmm. like selected to be part of his team,
yeah.
The ghosts like to help boost the signal,
right?
And the Holy Grail, I guess, being just the ship as like part of the legend.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was only a few. It's like weird that it's like in. It's still in the future, right? When this place gets buried.
It was
the 80s.
Yeah, 80s.
So, but it's not an Arthurian legend. It just sort of plays into it.
Right.
But they call him the Fisher King.
Yeah.
It's like there's like history, but there's not.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been like a thing. Like it, you don't know how old this guy is. You don't know how long he's been. I mean, he'd only been one of many
Fisher Kings.
That's true. Mm-hmm. It could be like a title that is passed down from one person to the next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, the title of a king is.
Well, what do you guys think of the monster?
I admit the anticipation of him was much scarier than when I actually got to see him full view.
Yeah.
And I don't often get afraid watching Doctor Who, but when I was sitting and watching it in my apartment, it's kind of like, I'm kind of unnerved right now. Also, because I just find ghosts to be creepy. But overall, just like he was not as scary or as, I guess, impactful as his ghosts were. I felt like the ghosts were a lot more threatening.
Interesting. I actually thought the opposite, in that like the ghosts I felt were relatively benign. But then I felt like this guy, he had a very big presence about him.
Mm.
He had more knowledge than a lot of, like, Monster of the Weeks have.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you felt that he had been a ruler, and you felt like he had been, like, dominating worlds for decades, you know?
Mm.
And so I felt like this is one of the rare times where I feel like the Doctor kind of came across someone who was about his equal.
Mm.
At least in terms of, like, presence.
I don't know. I feel like anyone who takes over the Tivoli are kind of, like, cowards in and of themselves. Like, these are the people that you want to conquer.
Well, so they might not have been the only people they conquered. They're like...
Maybe right. The last. Maybe they just got really tired.
Yeah, they're like, we just conquered a race of, like, a warrior race. Yeah. Like, we still need to conquer someone today.
You tell me when you conquered the Centaurans. When you do that, then we can talk. But you're just conquering the Tivoli. I don't really care.
It's like their vacation colony, you know?
Yeah. It's like, who cares? Like, so you conquer people who want to be conquered.
This was the creepiest Tivolian. Like the last time, the last time we dealt with them,
was the elevator.
It was the god complex.
The hotel that was.
And he was just sort of sketchy. Like he was kind of like a weasel. He was a weasel. Yeah. He was like getting in trouble. This guy had some like. I wish Yael was here. Because you know, like, that moment where, he's like, I have a selection of items that you can use to oppress me.
Right? That was a little kinky.
Whoa, guy. Whoa.
Yeah.
That was great. I loved that character. I wish he would stay around, but he's dead.
but he's dead.
I mean, yeah.
You know, well, it's time travel. He can
That's true. Oh, man. Know. So excited.
Weird little Undertaker Tivolian. Right? With an oppression fetish.
Yeah.
Well, don't they all... Isn't that, like, a characteristic of being Tivolian, is that you like to be oppressed? So I would imagine... Oh, God, I would love an episode where they went to Tivoli.
That would be so weird. Like,
how crazy and kinky these people are, because they just all they ever want is to be oppressed and controlled.
That could also just be an interesting thing for the Doctor to deal with. If he's like trying to stop an invasion that's going to kill a whole bunch of people, and they're like, "No, what are you doing? I'm saving you." They're like, "No, don't do that. I don't understand what's happening."
Right?
The Doctor's just really confused.
It's like his first interaction with the Tivoli. They're like, "No, we like this."
But the Fisher King to me. They built up this character and then just didn't do much with it. There's this crazy design of a monster. He knows the Time Lords, which most monsters don't. Like in like Eccleston's era and early Tennant, you were constantly running into monsters who had been directly affected by the Time War and were angry about it or something like that. Mm-hmm. But you don't usually see that. It's just like we needed a home or like it's an invasion, like for whatever reason.
They've kind of been touching on that a little bit more though, with these past four episodes, of just how. I mean, so far, you know, he's run into with the Daleks, and then with the Fisher King. They might be going in that direction where the monsters are starting to have a better understanding of Time Lords and the Doctor, because I think they're building up getting back to Gallifrey.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, as they're escaping this pocket dimension, the memory of them is kind of flooding back into people's brains.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I hope that we get back there soon, because we know it's coming.
Yeah.
Like, you don't bring that planet back just to never deal. It's just out there in the ether for, like, 5 years. And Moffat did say that we're not going to get back immediately.
Yeah.
But we didn't go back at all last year, which a lot of people, including myself, were surprised about. I was surprised that they would introduce that Gallifrey's back in the 50th. And then not make it back for an entire season.
Right.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. It was just surprising. But even in this episode, like that stuff aside, I just felt like he wasn't really that, like they built him up like he was coming out of the shadows and it was a scary design, but he just like, wasn't threatening.
Yeah.
He had a gun to the Doctor, but didn't shoot.
Exactly.
I never was worried about him.
He seemed kind of stupid when he believed the doctor and just left the doctor and went to go check on his ship. I'm like, why would you not take the doctor with you or kill him? And he also looked like a toned down version of the monster from Mimic. Does anyone remember that movie?
I remember it because I liked it.
Because it's terrifying because it's just like a giant cockroach who learns how to morph into looking like people and then it's like breaks. Oh my god, right. It's terrifying.
Interesting. I actually thought he looked more like the brain bug, like a walking version of the brain bug from Starship Troopers, like with the foldy face thing. Anyways.
What we think he really looks like. But as much knowledge as he had about the Time Lords, like the first thing you should know about Time Lords is that they do lie. So like, why would you just go along with it and be like, okay, let me go check on the
ship?
But
even less so the Time Lords, but just the Doctor.
And the Doctor. The doctor lies. Yeah, they all lie. I mean, the Master lies.
Even he admits that they're not like trustworthy and everything. You will do, like, there was some very interesting stuff. Like, he did seem to know the Doctor's story.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, like, the Doctor said, when he said, this world is protected by me. Yes, one man lost in time.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew that, like, the Doctor was alone.
Yeah.
And all this. Like, so it was interesting. I'm not, here was the thing that confused me about the Fisher King and his story. He was brought here by a funeral director,
right.
Or like to be buried or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, because it was like a landfill in his eyes.
Yeah.
Was he dead?
Yeah.
Then how was he?
Well,
this is where I got confused because I thought he was dead, and they didn't really make clear up why he was suddenly alive.
Yeah.
Was it? Because it was. So it was either a trick, like to get him to this place, but if so, why?
Yeah.
Or something about the situation brought him back to life.
I had thought it was just like the Arcatinians? I thought that they had thought they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was kind of like a Trojan horse thing in that like he would get off planet, come back, rebuild his army, have them pick him up, and then they can go back and retake over.
Okay.
I think they did mention that. He said something along the lines of, I am rebuilding them so that we can go back. Or he said something about getting his ghost to a certain amount so that he could...
So that they could summon an armada.
Okay. Yeah, I know about the armada and stuff, but, like, that all felt like the next step in his process. I guess I watched it twice, just today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I missed... It was so quick, I guess I just missed it.
Yeah, he mentioned it, I think, briefly when talking to the doctor. And then I watched the first half when I got here just to kind of see, like... Because sometimes without closed captioning, I don't understand what's happening. But
it's a lot of terms.
So I was like, wait, I miss this. But they didn't really touch on how quickly, like, why it was he could come back to life so quickly and why he chose to do it in that moment. Maybe it was because they were all there and he felt like, okay, well, there's enough people for me to kill? I don't know.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get his ghost.
Yeah, I mean, he does make an interesting point. Like, how many ghosts can you get out of a Time Lord?
Mm.
Like, if you just kept killing the Doctor with this thing, like...
Yeah, regenerating.
Would the ghost just not work because of the regeneration? I mean, this is a question that just does not need an answer, but
right.
It's still fun to ask.
Yeah.
Like, would you have 12 ghosts, or would he just keep not dying, so you'd only get one ghost after you get through all 12 regenerations.
Well, I think you'd only get one.
I mean, it depends on how you view regeneration. Yeah. Since every doctor is slightly different, could you imagine that each of his generation is another soul? So then, essentially, each time he's killed and regenerates, he sheds himself of that soul and builds a new one from scratch.
Hmm.
Still keeping his core, but essentially having new bark around his main tree.
I think it's one soul.
Yeah.
Call it that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although the second set of regenerations makes that even more questionable.
Yeah.
My brain hurts.
I know.
So much fandom.
But I mean, if you think about it, when we went to his grave and you see, like, the body of the Doctor, and it's just like
the time stream.
Yeah, it's just time stream. So it's who knows what you would get if you tried to make a ghost out of the Doctor. And also, then that kind of plays into the bootstrap paradox where, well, in reality, the Doctor must know that there wouldn't really be a ghost of him if he doesn't have the same type of essence that a human has.
Right. Though I would say that the Doctor dying is handled in different ways.
Yeah.
Because, like, Tin, when he died in Donna's other universe, he was just dead.
Yeah.
When he died as the Eighth before he turned into the War Doctor, he was just a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
But then when Matt Smith died, he turned into a time stream. So, it's very...
Well, I think it was also because of how he died. Didn't he just die of old age? Like, he just...
That's the version of events where he doesn't get another set of regenerations.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's the events of Christmas. Mm-hmm. I guess the planet Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Or Trenzalore.
Yeah.
I guess is easier to call it. Less confusing. Trenzalore, but he just doesn't regenerate. So he gets killed on that battlefield.
Right.
So the time stream, I guess, only forms when you've run through all of your regenerations.
Okay.
And then he dies of either whatever cause, but he has no more regeneration, so he becomes the time stream.
Right, dies of a nosebleed, got it.
But the other ones were dead with regenerations left because of other circumstances, you might actually have a body. So maybe that's
fair.
The difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What do you guys think at home?
Yeah, let us know.
If you can still follow what we just put
I'm always amazed when I actually get to have a conversation about Doctor Who, how I can still keep track of what I'm talking about. Because I know people watching must be like, what?
My favorite is when somebody who doesn't watch Doctor Who is nearby a conversation. Uh-huh. Like at AfterBuzz, we do a lot of different programming here.
Yeah.
And so there's people doing very different shows right next to us. I believe Keeping Up with the Kardashians is on at the same time.
Right.
So when those types of people are next to the Whovians, it's real confusing.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so with that, let's... As it builds into this, mm-hmm. talk about the bootstrap paradox.
Yeah. Okay.
So what was your issue with it? I'm not going to abbreviate issue.
My issue with it was by the end of this, and like we'll go back and talk about like how that was presented at the beginning and mm-hmm. all that. But my issue was that it felt like it was supposed to be this super deep part about, like, I guess it comes down to what I love about science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
What I love in science fiction is when a show can be about time travel and aliens and crazy stuff, mm-hmm. but still bring a message that is very human and relatable that can affect, like, everyday life that we go through. Mm-hmm. This is a very deep part that can affect your life if you travel through time. It's very within the world of Doctor Who. So it affects the way that the Doctor and time travel works.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That question of paradoxes through time. And it's very interesting. It wasn't a brand new thought.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, the whole thing is literally says, you can go Google it.
I did.
Yeah.
I was going to ask. I want to know, you guys in the chat roll, how many of you immediately, like without stopping the episode, Googled it?
Yeah,
I Googled it afterwards.
Yeah,
but
I waited until the episode was over, but I immediately was like, I must know.
Right.
I was with my girlfriend, and she just took out her phone and Googled. She's like, the Doctor told me to Google it.
Right?
You do what he says.
It reminded me sort of Listen last year,
mm-hmm.
which where the episode was so strong, and while I'm watching it, I'm like, this is great. This is interesting. I'm so engaged, and I'm having a great time. But at the end of it, it felt deeper than it was.
Mm.
With Listen, it was I loved the idea of, like, what's out there? Is there something listening?
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't provide enough answers for me to land with its decision.
Okay.
I hope I'm being clear.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
go ahead.
I think if Moffat is wise... And pulls a Davies, which makes me such a jerk for saying that, but and plants that seed to continue it later, then it's a wise choice. I think it was just a one-off about bootstrap paradoxes, and that kind of sucks. So I hope he kind of plays with that and gives it to us so that there's something that we can kind of look forward to, especially knowing, like, just knowing in terms of, like, casting how some things are going to change. I think that would be kind of a cool thing to toy with.
That would be that's a great point.
Yeah.
Because I would take away all of my, like, these complaints I'm having right now, is if this is a seed for something bigger.
Yeah.
Right.
But it reminded me so much of Listen, which I said that exact same thing last year,
yeah,
which is if this is a seed for something that we're building towards, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But if it's not, it's just sort of like, a good episode with a weird end.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's, this just, it reminded me so much of how I felt at the end of Listen, that's why it's not sitting well with me.
Interesting.
Because I guess the thing I like about Bootstrap Paradox, whenever I've seen it, though I never knew the term, but in terms of, like, when you're watching something and I can't think of a good one, where the person's rushing to do all this stuff and they realize that it's
they
like somewhere in time, like, yes. Somewhere in time where he realizes that he's going back and then he finds the
right
penny. And
yeah, the simplest version is when Marty goes back and plays Johnny B. Goode for Chuck Berry, essentially, and causes that whole thing to
exactly.
start.
The causal.
Basically, Bootstrap Paradoxes are all built around guitars.
Yes.
Pretty much.
That's what you're saying.
Basically. Yeah. Music. So if they, because I just love that so much, I hope that there's just like a really, I don't know, I like when the doctor's sad sometimes, a really heartbreaking moment of like him realizing that he is caught in a bootstrap paradox and like one of the worst moments that he could possibly caught in one, you know?
So right.
That will be much heavier than this one was.
I didn't mind the paradox as much. I mean, mostly because I feel like that is the theme of Doctor Who, where it's just like, it's just time travel. Get over it. And things happen.
They've been saying that a lot this season.
Well, yes. And I think that...
To be fair, it's Doctor Who. They say that all the time.
But I've noticed it more so this season, where he's just like...
Well, yeah.
He'll turn to the camera and just be like, deal with it.
A bit more winky, like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But, like, I feel like it plays with this idea of destiny. And I think that we got a little bit of that in the first two-parter, where it's like, essentially, you know, the doctor created the destiny of this boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, though you can't change it, you can play in it, you can adjust it, you can do little things.
Yeah.
And I feel like that might be the theme of this season, in that, like, Bootstrap is all about, like, you're destined to make this thing come to existence, even if it didn't exist before.
Yeah.
And so I felt like it was just kind of playing into that whole theme.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I think... I'm curious, like, you guys let us know... let us know in the chat roll and in the comments and on the YouTube, on the iTunes and all that. What you thought of the Bootstrap Paradox plotline? Did you like it? Do you need more for it to land?
Oh, Zach.
Oh, yes?
Looking at the chat, we first of all have a lot of people who said that they Googled it.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
While still watching the show or pausing and Googling it. And then Ryan Whittleson in chat says, the Bootstrap Paradox appeared in the Children of Need special with the 5th and 10 Doctors.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Nice, I didn't
and that's, know. And that's your chat update for right now.
Also, Boo69Bs, I know it was it was Marvin Berry, but he was holding the phone up, so it was for also Chuck Berry.
Yes.
Boom.
It was for
Boom.
Chuck. It was Marvin for Chuck. Made the call.
Right.
Oh, you
your
guys.
Call's in Marvin. Dr. Marvin.
Right? Like, we get it. You're Chuck Berry's cousin.
Do you think... Sorry, this is just off the top of my head, but like... Could we get a Michael J. Fox like cameo in that Doctor Who episode?
That would be great.
Especially for the 30th anniversary.
Doesn't have to play Marty McFly. Like, that would I almost be too much.
Yeah.
But just to get them in the same room. Yeah.
I think you're more likely to, just by what they've been referencing the past few episodes, you're more likely to get a Bill and Ted cameo.
They have. They have been sort of leaning on that.
Ben and Marty. I would love Back to the Future cameo.
You can. I haven't gotten the game yet, but I will, because the Doctor Who part doesn't come out for a few weeks. But Lego Dimensions, you can just do that. You can just have Doc Brown and the Doctor going on adventures.
What?
That
would be great. Yes.
Yeah. It's going to blow my mind. I'm just...
If they could get Christopher Lloyd to come back as the Doctor, or as Doc... to meet the Doctor.
Oh my God, Christopher Lloyd and the Doctor. Right. Christopher Lloyd would be the Doctor, like, in an American alternate reality.
Right.
Anyway, back on topic. What did you guys think of the opening where he introduces the Bootstrap Paradox? Mm-hmm. I don't think we've seen this in any of modern Who,
where he seems
to directly address the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like he looks down lens. Mm-hmm. He spikes the lens 100%.
Yeah,
I mean, I felt like it was just them. They're like, this is our thesis statement, so you understand what's going to happen in this mm-hmm. episode. And we're basically setting it up so the rest of it can knock it down.
It was different, because I've never felt like they've ever had to explain anything to me before. Like, I'll mm-hmm. usually get it. And it did tie into just the whole creation of Davros, in terms of, like, it comes out of this because you happen to meet and... Would it have happened if you had not happened to fall on this planet at that time to save this boy? But I did... I don't mind. I kind of get, like... I just want everything to be a seed. So if Clara is going to be gone, then they might toy with the Doctor doing a few direct addresses to us for, you know, a little bit while they figure out if they want... Who they want the next companion to be. And I would totally be down with being, like, the Doctor's... companion for a few episodes.
It was a little jarring for me. Like, it took me out of it for a minute, because I was trying to figure out who he was talking to.
Oh, really?
Because I wasn't expecting him to be talking to me, the audience. Like, it reminded me a little bit of very, very early Doctor Who, where it was very much an educational program.
Right.
So there were times where they, like, don't necessarily address the camera, but sort of, like, lean into the fact that you're explaining things more for the kids watching. I don't know, it just felt, if it was cool. I just don't want them to lean on it and go back to it anytime soon, because it's not what I'm like looking for. And maybe it was also that explanation early on mm-hmm. that sort of threw me towards the end. I guess here's the other thing. They introduced the Bootstrap Paradox as if this is like this is the time that it's happened. Mm-hmm. It feels like Doctor Who does this all the time to me. Like, this paradox is nothing new for the Doctor, but the episode presents it as if it's, like, a new thing that he's experiencing.
Yeah, it's like the whole... It's like River Song. Like, I feel like...
Yeah.
All of River Song is a Bootstrap Paradox.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, they do it a couple times in this episode. I know that, like, there's a certain school of thought that, like, you sort of just have to, like, make this episode good and not worry about the previous. But, like, the Fisher King is, like, you're willing to die rather than change a word of the future. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hold on. The Doctor changes the future
all the time.
Every week, one, because just by being there, he's affecting it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But also, like, look at the 50th. As, like, the biggest example. He went directly into his time stream mm-hmm. and changed what he did.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I just have to kind of go, I'm going to ignore that and just keep on. Like, yeah. Because they used to talk about it a lot more, at least during the Russell T. Davies years, about how he was very concerned about changing... creating any type of paradox. I don't know how many times I heard Christopher Eccleston as a ninth doctor say, no, a paradox will be created. We can't create a paradox. I don't want to create a paradox. So I don't know if there are going to be some long-term ramifications for eventually start to show up for the Doctor, because he's become, like, a little bit willy-nilly with Stephen Moffat.
Moffat is a little bit more fast and loose with it.
Yeah.
Davies, like, you had to rip apart the TARDIS to make a paradox last.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all of the second or the final season with Rose, with David Tennant, was just about the biggest concern about creating a paradox, and why is there an alternate universe and or alternate planet, and you know, right. So they were really concerned with how that affected the alternate planet and our planet. Right. Whereas, I don't think Moffat cares that much.
I mean, he did not to be an apologist or anything, but like. The Doctor did bring up the idea of the paradox when Bennett was trying to save O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was more like a Fires of Pompeii kind of thing, where it was you know, he was supposed to be there and he was supposed to break the dam. He was because the base was already in a flooded city. Yeah. He had to be there to make that happen. Yeah. So it was already written. Yeah. So and you know, Doctor's so, always like,
and he'll say that where it's like. You know, there are
fixed points,
and then they're
fluctuating. Yeah.
Or could you potentially argue that if he hadn't been there, the events would have unfolded at the hand of the Fisher King, in one way or another, blowing up the dam
that and it getting buried. Anyway.
That it would have happened, and it did happen. And then the Doctor showed up, and basically this whole thing was him. Like, this would sort of undo the bootstrap paradox, and this is like sort of like almost a fix in my mind for it, if you need one. Mm-hmm. You know, not that it needs it, but if the Fisher King goes through this and sets everything in motion, and the Doctor sort of goes through these things of like it would have made a ghost of him, and right. he would have been saying those things because of whatever the Doctor would do to make himself say different words.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he goes back, but he is able to, he's mimicking the things. This is more of the Back to the Future logic, actually, right. is where it happened one way, but you went back and you screwed up how it gets started, so you can do it a different way that leads to very similar results.
Right.
So, like, at the end of it, the Doctor's alive, he's not a ghost, but there was a hologram to make up for it so that it didn't affect the flow of time.
Right.
It still got to the same point at the end.
Yeah. I think they kind of touched on... I think Back to the Future, in terms of how they talk about time travel, is just, like, one of the best-written films.
It's but, so simple.
And they get it. And it is kind of, like, getting back to... But it still is kind of getting back to that fixed point, you know? As long as... Just to rip on Back to the Future. Marty can get his parents back to that point. And Doc Brown talks about this. That's where you need to get them back to. It doesn't matter how they get there. As long as they get to that place... at the prom when they kiss or this under the sea, then that's all that matters. So I think you could play with the bootstrap paradox in that way with the episode where it ends up being the Fisher King who doesn't know how to lure people to this place. So he, you know, opens the dam up and like
right.
makes it underwater and waits 150 years, whatever, to get people to come and help him.
Right.
But I don't think they fleshed it out as much, and unfortunately, I don't think. Well, no, they had 2 hours to do it.
Right.
Never mind.
That's part of. Well, that's part of the bootstrap paradox. Is that the idea is that in time the whoever created the thing or originally was responsible for the object would have gotten there in time. It's just your introduction of it accelerates that process.
Mm-hmm.
And so like. Yes, he could have, like, Fisher King could have been like, all right, I'm going to lure a bunch of people, ruin the dam. That's how he got all his ghosts. And so, like, essentially there could be a darkest timeline, which is overwritten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. By the hand of the Doctor. Like, making it better, but still getting it through the same beats.
Yeah.
Right.
Which doesn't let him save Bennett and Donald. Well, hold on. Before we get to those guys, I guess we should address, because people are asking us in the chat roll to address it, the sunglasses. Because the sunglasses are a huge part of how he solves this issue.
Right.
How do you guys feel about, now, like, when they were first introduced, that they were going to be really lightly used, was sort of what we thought. Very much not. They're being very leaned on a lot. What do you guys think?
I mean, I stand where I stood last week in that, like, I still like them. I feel like they're being used more practically than the screwdriver. Yes, they're being leaned on, but it's like, you know, they had to wait to be connected to the Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Like, they were only really used to create the hologram, and then also to erase the thoughts from the people's heads. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he had waved it around and it fixed all the ghosts and erased the text or anything. So I feel like it's still being used in its most practical sense, not necessarily willy-nilly.
I like the screwdriver, but, like, and I feel like if he had had the screwdriver, he could have shined it into their eyes. But, you know, with that said, I don't mind the sonic sunglasses. It makes sense with the direction with which they're taking Peter Capaldi's Doctor, which is so different from how they first introduced him in the long coat and the button-up. So you can definitely tell that he's kind of like, oh, this is kind of how I want to do it.
Yeah.
And they made it make sense how he would use sonic sunglasses. So I appreciated that.
I think Shadrach Del Monte in the chat role sort of sums up similarly to how I feel. They said, I don't like them, but how he used them here, he couldn't do that with the sonic screwdriver.
That's my point. I feel like you could still use the sonic screwdriver, but I understand why you're trying to make sense of the sunglasses. I'll take it for now. Just get rid of it soon.
But I guess my issue with it now is, like, I like the sunglasses. Like, that's fun. Mm-hmm. That's different. I like different. Different is good.
Yeah.
But make it different. That's the thing, is that, like, this wasn't limiting. Like, I thought that when they introduced a different sonic tool, mm-hmm. it would have to be used differently. Like, it wouldn't be capable of all of the things that the sonic screwdriver is. Because they said they were losing it because we talked about Moffat's quotes last week, mm-hmm. because they felt it was becoming a crutch. Mm-hmm. But when the glasses can create a hologram while the doctor is in a cryostasis tube, and then he can plug it into, like, he can just stick the ear of the sunglasses into the port and mm-hmm. use it to, like, get into the base connects. Like, now it's just doing what the screwdriver does with a slightly sillier looking, like, interface.
Well, right. As long as it can open doors, then I think we're okay.
But and what they've presented us with makes it seem like it could.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, I would love for the Doctor to be more limited. That would create great storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I love the sunglasses on Capaldi because it looks ridiculous. Which, if you saw the opening of the show, you know that we love ridiculous.
Right.
I just want them to pick a direction with it. And it's sort of, right now, it's sort of unclear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What the limitations and the abilities of it are.
Yeah. They got some focus groups on it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, right? They're like, this isn't
going to work. But it's fun. And I liked that they could do, holograms sort of make sense. It's visual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, like, the erasing of memories thing is just, like, it's sense. Like reverse Men in Black.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, you put on the sunglasses and we erase your memories.
That's nice.
I kind of want to get some Ray-Bans now. Like, Ray-Ban, how much do you think Ray-Ban paid to have those, them be the sunglasses?
Oh, probably. They were like, we'll just give them to you.
Yeah,
just,
pretty
like,
much.
Bring back the Ray-Ban popularity. And they're like,
okay. Yeah, the hipsters aren't doing that for them already. No,
not as much as, like, oh, well, anyways, Men in Black, like, blew up Ray-Bans, but
right. Like, everybody in science fiction loves Ray-Bans. Yeah. What can you say? So let's talk about our team of humans, if you will. Or starting with Clara, because she's leading her own little squadron during this. We're running low on time, so let's get into Clara.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of her plot line in this episode?
I wonder what's going on, because they keep referencing about how she's so much like the Doctor. So I want to know if that's going to lead to, like, what happens to her eventually, because they keep touching on that again. That's all I got.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Well, there's one thought in the chat roll of what if she gets to Gallifrey? Mm-hmm. Like, if we can get to Gallifrey before the end of the season, not that we are, or, like, there's any evidence that, But seeing somebody who thinks that she is effectively a Time Lord deal with actual Time Lords.
Right.
Because that's sort of what I think you're hitting at there, is that, like, she thinks she's on the Doctor's level.
Yeah.
I don't think the Doctor would agree with that.
No.
But she does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry?
I view Clara... So, here's the thing about raising kids, is that, like, they're a reflection of you. They're your best and worst qualities, and I feel like that is what Clara is being right now. She is like this child who is tagging along with her dad or her grandpa, and she's taking on all these characteristics that aren't great for a regular person to have. Mm-hmm. And it's getting her to a point where she will never be able to go back to a regular life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is something that is kind of being touched on, in that, like, the Doctor not necessarily ruins people, but, like, I mean, he definitely changes them forever in a way that makes them basically incompatible with anyone who's not the Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you
can never go back.
How can you live a normal life, more or less,
yeah,
when you've seen it all? Like, and she says to Bennett at one point, like, you can, like, after, because he loses O'Donnell.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of had the dual romances,
yeah,
playing out in
odd
this episode.
Anyway.
Right.
We had not what's her name?
Cass and Bennett?
No,
O'Donnell.
O'Donnell
is our replacement for
Osgood.
Osgood, thank you. Not Osgood. Yeah. O'Donnell is basically not Osgood.
Not Osgood.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's good. I'll give it to you. But she tells Bennett, like, he needs to move on.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. Do you guys have any other quick thoughts before we head into?
I didn't understand why they need the dual love story thing, but okay, I get it. I guess they just wanted to do love story. But
yeah,
that's it.
Love transcends time.
Yes.
You know,
I could have done one or the other.
Yeah,
like,
I
liked
both.
Cass and her
but,
guy.
Yeah.
But I liked O'Donnell and Bennett. I didn't need both.
Yeah, I didn't
right
need both.
Both
good. All right. Running low on time, so let's do some predictions.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Oh, it's new.
Okay, so next week, Maisie Williams.
Woo!
That's
yeah
the big thing everyone's talking about. Apparently, Maisie Williams is not allowed to wear modern clothing on television.
Right? I was like, oh, it's like Game of Thrones.
She's yeah appearing in the Vikings episode. I got really excited. I was like, Vikings, oh, this is going to be great. And then I was like, oh, wait, Maisie Williams. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Poor girl. Like, can't we put her in 21st century?
All right, what are you guys thinking for next week?
Or
the future at all.
Yeah.
I think that she's going to be just a regular towns girl, which is sad because we wanted her to be a Time Lord.
Mm.
I think that she's going to be a saucy minx, and it's going to be real fun. And I think that the Vikings are going to be robots. Is that already established? They're aliens, but they're like...
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
we
not,
did
not alien robots, but
we did the robot
yeah
medieval
with
invasion last year in Sherwood.
Yeah.
Oh,
we had
yeah
like medieval times being
yeah
invaded by robots.
And then we did it also in series 5 with Rory.
Right.
And all the
right
cuz they were robots too.
Yes.
They were plastic.
They were the plastic guys.
Yeah.
Which like but it would just be like a season later.
Yeah.
Like, I could do 3 seasons and, like, you do something sort of similar, but,
right,
like,
yeah
literally the next year,
yeah,
you do, like, another robot invasion.
I think it would be cool if the Vikings were just, like, that ended up being, like, a planet of Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, Bizarro Earth where Vikings took over everything and,
no,
like,
that would be really
everything
cool
just kept going that way.
Yeah.
Well, whatever is under those crazy, like, Bioshock-style, like, helmets, they are called the deadliest warrior race in the galaxy.
Mm.
One of them, as
right
the Doctor points out, because there's a lot. You got the Suntarans, you got the Jadoon, you
yeah
know.
Mm-hmm.
They reminded me a little yeah bit of the shape of the Jadoon.
Mm.
I think it's going to be about whatever those... I've missed what they were called in the preview, but them and the Vikings as the... The Vikings were very much the top warrior
mm
of their time.
Yeah.
Right.
And for them to come up against... and it's yeah called the Girl Who Died.
Mm.
So I will bet... Mm. I would predict way early Maisie Williams is gonna die.
Mm.
But that yeah she'll come back. because in the previews she recognized the Doctor, and I'm still trying to figure out why.
Yeah, the girl. Well.
It's the girl who died, who and then the it was the girl who died, she's, and then the sequel like, is the woman who lived.
Maybe she's an old companion that we never touched on. Our future companion.
Or that like preview could just be because she's real sassy in this week's next week's preview. So it could just be like they encounter each other, and then he's like, "I'm gonna meet you in the castle," and then she's like, "What took you so long, old man?" Like simple.
Oh yeah. Okay. So it's just like from. The next from episode 6,
right?
That's fair. That would be such a tease, such a tease.
Oh, no.
Like we're like, oh, it's Susan. It's like we had all these crazy predictions, and then it's just like, no, she's just a character from episode 5, and talking about him in episode 6.
You've never seen before.
All right, guys. Well, we got a lot of them more, and they're fun. I say keep bringing them on. They're a blast so far. Thank you guys so much for joining us for the Doctor Who After Show at AfterBuzz TV. Until next week, Tari Miller, where can the people keep up with you?
I'm Tari J. Miller. You can find me on Twitter at Tari J. It's TauriJay. You can also find me on the Flash panel on Tuesdays at 9 and the Arrow panel on Wednesdays at 10.
All right, I'm Adrian Snow. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Adrian Snow. You can also catch me filling in for Tori two Wednesdays from now on the air.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
And you guys can follow me on Twitter at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson, and a whole bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, including The Muppets, we're on Doctor Who right now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Sleepy Hollow. Guys, I'm Zach Wilson, and thanks for geeking out with us.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.